Valve is going to court in the UK over its 30% cut of all sales. Plus, Sony has patented a touchscreen controller with movable buttons. Tonight is February 1st, 2026, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Snowy hogwash is what we have, apparently, in many parts. We've got, like, it's a cyclone. It's a bomb cyclone going on. I don't know. I'm not a weatherman. I'm a software developer that has a microphone. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Not a Weather edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this Sunday night, congratulations, you survived January 2026. Can we get a do-over, maybe? I don't know. But congratulations. If you're joining us here on the first day of February... welcome. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. However, not next week. I will explain why I won't be here next week. Yeah, we do try to tape the show live there, but this is also a podcast, so you can join us on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, and you can react to shows, and we will revisit topics as we learn more things about said topics. So yeah, I will not be here next week. I get a yearly invite to something that happens on Sunday night. So we are going, I will be hanging out with a bunch of people at a Bad Bunny concert viewing party. Basically, this is the way that I'm looking at it. So, you know, hanging out with a bunch of people, watching Bad Bunny perform. There's going to be other stuff going on that night, but really, it's the Bad Bunny concert viewing party that I'm going there for. So I will not be here next Sunday night. Now, I haven't asked, but I'm pretty sure they will probably tell me in chat if Orange Lounge Radio 2DX will be going on next week anyway, because it is sports. And pod culture is on that show and doesn't care about sports. So usually Orange Lounge Radio has been on during that event, that yearly event. I am the one that goes. And the reason is because I still like being with people. And it's the one time a year I get to see some people. It's like literally some people I've known them for decades. I see them once a year. And it is on this, like, the second Sunday in February every year, which is why... I do take that time to be with people that I don't get to see all that often, and it does happen on a Sunday night, so I am not here. But it looks, I believe Orange Lounge Radio 2DX will still be here, so you will still have Vogue Network content if you don't care about the actual main event that's going on Sunday that I don't care about. There will still be programming here for you. It just won't be me. I believe Dark Soccer just said in chat that they will be live. So yes, I won't be here, but you'll still have something if you want it here at the Voice of Geeks Network. I got snowed in this weekend. So all of the bad stuff that was supposed to happen last weekend that kind of didn't materialize here weather-wise and canceled some things, it actually showed up. And so we got snowed in. We will rebuild. It was harrowing. It was very very, very hard. We were persevering. You know, people on the Twitch stream can see a picture that I posted up on social media earlier on. This is the definition of snowed in. And for those on the podcast feed, it's a picture out my front door. You can see, the little sidewalk in front of my house. It's white. My lawn, there's patches of green with some white in between. And my driveway, which slopes downward because we got a lot of hills here. This is not a flat area. It's mostly dark, wet color. It's not white. So this was the big snow that we got in my area. It was supposed to start falling at like 4 a.m, and it waited until like 1 p.m. to start falling. So we will rebuild. We will do. We will get out. Hopefully, I will be able to bury myself out or shovel myself out tomorrow when it gets to be like 50 degrees Fahrenheit here. So hopefully, you know, yeah. Dark Soccer in chat says, "My dearest Petunia, I pray this letter finds you before the cat gets too cold." Yes, we didn't lose power. Everything worked fine. Heater still worked. So, you know, we're very thankful. It really wasn't that bad. It was just, you know, we didn't want to be on the roads or anything. So I built Lego. I actually got through my Lego backlog. And since it's a video game related Lego, I've had it for a while. I've got a huge backlog, but I'm like, I don't want to build like something big. And, you know, so I decided my wife had gotten me the Donkey Kong Lego cart. It's part of the Super Mario stuff. So it has like the QR code and everything. So I built it, you know, 3 bags. At the end of the first bag, you get this Donkey Kong that has a paper tie. The DK tie is actually paper that goes in there, and he's posable. You can move the arms and stuff. There's a banana, Lego banana for scale right there. Then in the second bag, you start building the cart. There are stickers. It sucks. I hate stickers. I hate rubber bands the most. In Lego builds, my top two annoyances are rubber bands are at the top. Stickers are the second. And especially stickers that are round, which is what all the stickers from the third bag are. And so the unfortunate part is they're not centered. So, like, even the wheels there have stickers, and they're round stickers on a round part. And it's supposed to look like, you know, it looks like a little spiral bouncing around the edge because one's too... Anyway, I built it. It's, you know, the mechanisms it has a thing that you can fire shells from the front. So they give you a red shell and a blue shell, and there is another thing that has like a little target on it. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to put the banana on top, and if you hit the target with the shell, the banana falls. So that is that was the build. You know, 3 bags. I only messed up a couple times. I messed up more than I thought. The instructions for this one, the paper instructions, were not the best. There were times it's like, okay, put this and put it on the back. And I'm like, mate, why didn't you have me rotate so I could see like exactly where you wanted it? And I had put some wrong things on, so I had to like take it apart to get the right part out. Did it a little bit too quickly, but I finally figured it all out. I didn't lose anything, didn't break anything. It all got built. The stickers are not all centered. But I wish they had printed out more things. Like some of the stickers they did, or some of the things were printed bricks. Like Donkey Kong's eyes are actually printed on that brick. There is another. There's like speedometers or something, and those are printed circle bricks. And there was also there was something else that was printed. But anything that was like the DK logo, the target. And the wheels, those were stickers. So that was my fun yesterday while I was, quote unquote, snowed in. We probably wouldn't have gone out and done anything anyway. But I did get something else off of my Lego backlog, which is good. Did not bother trying to get the Enterprise out. I also have some other Legos that don't exactly have 30 bags of stuff. I've got some other Legos that are like in the 15 to 20 bag range, like the old foosball table, you know, sports. Yeah. The old foosball table. We have that. We have like one of the Van Gogh, I think Starry Night ones that we still have to build. But anyway, that is not that's not in the cards right now. And so that was my weekend playing that because I am eagerly awaiting. And you're going to be tired or probably hearing. You're probably going to be very tired of hearing me talk about something. I got notification that. I do have, it's on the way, is the Commodore 64 Ultimate. Now, the Commodore 64 Ultimate, I talked about it on the show when I ordered it in December. I was like, oh, it's awaiting shipment. It might get shipped to me. No. Like, I had to wait in the queue with everybody else. And they're like, oh, it's going to be a February to March timeframe. And I got my status updated, Thursday, saying, It is en route to your Commodore hub. It is expected to arrive to you by February 26th. And what the Commodore 64 Ultimate is it is an FPGA-based recreation of the Commodore 64, but it also accepts all of your existing peripherals. So if you still have a disk drive and you still have disks, you can plug that bad boy in and it'll work. If you have an old Commodore 1702 monitor or whatever, you can plug that bad boy in and it will work and it will look like that. It also has an HDMI out port. It also has USB ports and an SD card for D64 images. But it has a cartridge port, so if you have a cartridge, you can put that cartridge in there and it'll work. You can even like put in your own SID chips if you don't like the FPGA Ulta SIDs that are in there and you want to put in an authentic SID chip. It's got a place for that. You take the SID chip out of the Commodore that's busted, which is probably what I'll do, and you stick it in the socket and you turn it on and it goes. And then it's got internet. It's got a Wi-Fi antenna in there, a Wi-Fi modem. It's got an Ethernet jack if you want that. And that'll allow you to connect it to BBSs or other online things. I am super excited for this thing because I have a whole bunch of disks. And from what I've read is that people who have had their 5 1/4 inch floppy disks for 40 years, they still read. I'm expecting to find disk rot on a lot of my disks. But a lot of people are like, no, I found disks. I put in disks that I had. And I still read off of them, and then I can copy them to it. I can basically make them a D64 image, and then I don't have to worry about the disk itself. But I'm looking forward because I may find some programs that I wrote when I was like, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old playing around in BASIC, stuff I haven't seen in 40 years, and, maybe, you know, be able to actually see how bad I was at it. Dark Tatsia says, seems really cool, though. I missed out on the whole Seek64 thing. Yeah, the thing about this, this is not something, if you just were like, I want to play games that came out on the Commodore 64, this is not what you would get because it is expensive. It was $350 for the version I got. I got the Starlight model, which has like LED lights in it that actually like react to the sound. But the basic beige model, I think, is $300. But there is an additional tariff tax because these are coming from China. So you got to add $50 on top of that. And then you got to add sales tax on top of that and then delivery and all that stuff. So my machine is currently on a boat from China coming to the U.S. And then it's once it gets into the U.S. and clears customs, then they FedEx it from the Commodore hub, which I believe is up in New Jersey, I believe is where the one in the U.S. is. So, and somebody's like, Sean322 says, Bobby's going to stream the Oregon Trail on his Commodore 64. No. Never played. Oregon Trail was not one of my Commodore games. We obviously had Apple IIe's in school because that was the computer you had. Either had them or sometimes like we had trash 80s in like a computer lab in elementary school, but mostly it was the Apple II. And that was where I would have played Oregon Trail. I never played Oregon Trail on the Commodore 64. My game, if you want to talk edutainment, was like the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, those. And I even had, which went in the estate sale that I was doing after my mom passed away and I had to clear out my childhood home. But I had like the Fodor's encyclopedia that came with Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. And the other one that's like for Where in the USA is Carmen Sandiego. And those were on Commodore 64, I remember. And then on IBM PC compatible. So that's, and Pod Culture says now that theme is in my head. Yes. And you know, Rockapella, that theme, So that was my edutainment game, was like the Where in the World series and stuff like that. And maybe that's what I would stream if I do stream. But see, the thing is, I have my old monitor. I have my old disk drives. So I'm actually going to set this up like down in my basement with all my old equipment and my old, you know, I've even got a tape deck and I've got tapes. I don't know if the belts are going to still work, but other people apparently have had good track record with their tapes and their cassettes loading from cassette. I have all that stuff, so I'm not actually going to set it up here where I stream. I can bring it up here and, you know, hook it up via HDMI, but this is not necessarily going to be a streaming device. I have a C64 Maxi and a C64 Mini, which is a better choice. If you want to just play games, get a C64 Mini, I think, is still in production. I don't think they're making the Maxi, which is the full-size keyboard, but you can get that and you can play the games, and they emulate just fine. Questra says, time for winter games. Yeah, Summer Games 2 was a game that I played a lot. I did play that Epic's game. My favorite game as a kid is one that you probably never played. And it's not that great of a game. And I never did beat it. It's not hard. I just never beat it at the time. And it's a game, it's called Agent USA. And this is not on anybody's like top games list on Commodore 64. This is not a game that you probably would have heard of. It didn't get like a lot of the love, like a Lode Runner or a Jumpman or anything from Epix or anything like that. Agent USA was an edutainment game. That's how it was phrased. And it was about learning how to type correctly and learning geography. So basically, somewhere in America, there is a fuzz bomb. It is on the loose, all right? So the plot of the game, the very, very simple plot, there's a fuzz bomb. It is on the loose. The fuzz bomb travels from city to city, turning innocent people into fuzz bodies. And what it's got this little a box that has like a little fuzz into it. And so the people, if they're, you know, okay, their legs with a black top hat, you touch the fuzz or you touch anybody that has a fuzz, you turn into like a little thing of static. Now, what turns people back into, and they travel by train. So this also imagines a USA that is connected by trains. They travel by train, and if they touch somebody, then the fuzz spreads. So it's you know, it starts in one little city, and then they take over the whole thing. They take over the whole country. And your job as Agent USA is to stop the fuzz. And how you do that is you get crystals. And you can grow crystals by having them, by putting them down on the ground, and then they multiply. But other people want those crystals. So now if somebody who is a fuzz touches a crystal, they turn back into normal. But if they're normal, they can just pick up the crystals. The goal of the game is to grow 100 crystals, have 100 crystals in your possession. Find where the fuzz bomb is and then walk into the fuzz bomb with 100 crystals in your inventory. I love this game. And it's also because when you would travel, what you would have to do is you would have to travel by train to various cities. And you would need to get a ticket. And where the typing came in is you had to type exactly where you were. So in this YouTube video, they're starting in Madison, Wisconsin at midnight. And it would actually like take time to get your tickets or to travel, which you'll see in a second. So the first thing you would do is you go to the info. You would see where the fuzz bomb is. It highlights the dot where the fuzz bomb is. And then you could figure out where it was. And then you could see where it's going to spread. So you would basically go over there to get, you know, to stop the spread of things. So then you would go over and you would get tickets. And you would have to see the schedule and you would have to type exactly the destination. And it would tell you the time that the train is arriving. So this one, the train is arriving, just left. So this person actually just missed the train that they had gotten a ticket to. And so what he's trying to do, he's trying to, you know, get more crystals here. And he's trying to make the people not come up to take it because they all want those crystals. And this was the game loop, essentially. And this was my favorite game as a kid. So this person got on a train. And then it would actually take you time. And they would do time zones and stuff to try to, you know, when you would travel to someplace. Zemmick11 says, game sounds fun. Would be cool if it was one crystal, like a cool adventure caper. There was like an Agent USA 2, and it's nothing like this. But also like the background changed because like now it's 3:30 in the morning. All the lights in the city are off. So it's nighttime and then it becomes daytime. So I just thought it was really cool as a kid. And so this is probably one of the games I'd be playing and losing at. because if you get turned into a fuzz, if you have zero crystals left and you get turned into a fuzz, then you the game just you go around aimlessly until you touch a crystal. So you can like basically lose the game that way. Bakor says, I don't think I've ever heard of it. No, you probably haven't. I'm sure my dad pirated this game for me. I've gone through my disc boxes. We have very few discs that are actually printed, like actually like store-bought. They're all pirated. See, I don't have that much news to talk about today, so I'm like, I'm going to reminisce about that. So you're probably going to hear way more about the Commodore 64 Ultimate when it gets here, and I may have it with me on the stream once, but then it's going to live downstairs. I'm looking forward to getting online with it. There's BBSs that are now up for Commodore 64 that actually use Petsky and all that stuff. There's a good, you know, it actually comes with a way to connect to them over Telnet. But also I'm going to try to get Quantum Link, Q-Link Reloaded working, and Habitat, Neo Habitat working. I don't think anybody else has gotten those two things online yet, because they're more than just a straight Telnet emulation. But I'm going to try it, and we'll see. I actually did a whole thing, like I did a whole stream, and like it's on my YouTube, and people still comment on it, of the Neo Habitat running through Vice. Essentially, it runs through a Vice emulator and stuff like that. And Q-Link Reloaded, Q-Link became America Online. And Q-Link, it had chat rooms, like AOL had chat rooms. It had the people connection. And that Q-Link Reloaded actually works, and it actually connects to an IRC server. So it's actually, you connect to IRC, and it's got the people connection and stuff, and they're trying to, like, reverse engineer the Q-Link stuff. So that's kind of cool. That's going to be some memories that I'll remember, because when I first got online, it was on the Commodore 64 with a good old, I had a 2400 baud modem, but you had to use 1200 baud for Q-Link, especially because it couldn't handle being faster. Anyway, memories. I'm going to have so much fun with that. Even though I've got like a Commodore 64 Maxi right here and stuff, but it's like, it's actually going through like all my old discs and seeing what I find. That's going to be the fun one. Fun thing of that. And maybe I'll share some of the stuff I have. So anyway, let's talk about news that's going on this week around what's going on, and talk a little bit about some of the implications of some of this. And these came from our Discord server. So thank you so much, Vognetwork.com/Discord. There is a class action lawsuit coming, and it is allowed to go forward. A judge said it's going to go forward. GamesIndustry.biz reports that PC games giant Valve has been told it has to face a £656 million lawsuit in the UK, which claims the Steam giant's revenue share is too high and negatively impacts consumers. Now, that's a very heavy lawsuit. It translates to almost $900 million US dollars. That's what it is right now looking. I did the conversion today, so that's today's conversion rates. As spotted by Reuters, the company has been told by the London's Competition Appeal Tribunal that the case will continue to trial after Valve argued that it should not. The case was filed back in June of 2024 by Vicky Shotbolt, the CEO of Parent Zone, who believes that the company takes excessive commission charges, which ultimately, she claims, drives up costs for consumers. Valve takes a 30% revenue share from everything sold on Steam. Lawyers for Shotbolt also claim that should consumers want to purchase add-on content for a game, they have to do so through Steam, something they describe as locking in users to the platform. The case has been brought on behalf of 14 million Steam users in the United Kingdom, with damages provisionally estimated to reach as much as £656 million, which is $900 million US dollars. Per Shotbolt's initial filing to start collective proceedings, this would work out to between £8 and £23 per consumers purchasing games, between £14 and £29 on add-on content, coming to £22 to £44 in total. Shotbolt said when the lawsuit was originally filed, quote, Valve is rigging the market and taking advantage of UK gamers, unquote. Shotbolt has secured over £18.6 million to support the lawsuit, though Valve still queried her funding arrangements as part of its attempt to stop the case from going to trial. So Valve faced similar legal issues back on the same topic in the UK. Wolffire Studios initially filed an antitrust case against the Steam giant back in April of 2021, once again focusing on the platform's 30% revenue cut, which it described as extraordinarily high. The lawsuit was initially dismissed later that year, but was refiled the following May after some changes were made to the arguments. And meanwhile, Dark Cat Studios filed its lawsuit against Valve in June of 2021. In July of 2022, a court order said that the two cases would be combined into one, And in November 2024, the lawsuit was granted class action status. So what they are saying is 30% is too much. That is too much of a charge to list on your store. And they're probably claiming that this is a monopoly on PC gaming, which it's not technically a monopoly, but it could be functionally a monopoly in the eyes. And that's what they're trying to argue in the eyes of the court. Like, yes, other storefronts exist, but if you want to be in front of the most eyeballs, you have to be on Steam. Now, what Valve will argue is that 30% commission is how they can continue to maintain a storefront like Steam and develop and do and have features that benefit the consumer and the developer. And one of the things that they can point to, I don't think they will in this case, but you know, you look at the other player in the other major player in the market, or one of the other major players in the market, because there's a couple. But you look at Epic Games Studio, and they only take a 12% cut is the most that they take, and they've actually gone after all the other storefronts, saying, look, we can take 12%. But there are consequences of that. And Epic and Tim Sweeney at Epic Games even said one of the consequences of it out loud. Consumers for a long time wanted a shopping cart so they didn't have to buy individually. They could put things in a shopping cart. And other people, me included on this one, have said, I want to be able to purchase wallet cards so I don't have to give you my payment information. I do not have PayPal or a credit card or anything linked to any of my gaming accounts, my Steam account, Nintendo, Microsoft. I have none of that, because what I do is I buy wallet cards and I put those on my accounts. I will go down to my local grocery store or convenience store and I will buy wallet cards from there, which they're like, you do realize you're being scammed because if you're wanting to pay someone in these cards, which I'm like, no, I'm actually going to use it myself. But that is something that a lot of scammers will do. They'll be like, oh, go down and buy an Apple gift card, a $100 iTunes gift card, and read me the number. And that's how they get money. That's a very popular scam technique. But I'm not doing that. But they always have to ask, especially when I'm buying like $100 worth of Steam gift cards, which is why you can't get Steam gift cards at a whole bunch of places, because there was so much scamming going on with Steam gift cards. So they always ask. They ask at the register, and I'm like, no, it's really for me. I'm really a gamer. So I would do that, but you can't do that on Epic Games. And Tim Sweeney literally said, he actually said, we can't do that because we only take 12%. We don't have the budget to have an entire retail channel that works with retailers and prints these gift cards and all that, all the infrastructure around having wallet cards like that. Tim Sweeney said, if we took 30%, we'd be able to do it, but we don't. And so they have said, we are actually developer first. And yeah, the consumer experience is not going to be as much as they want, but the developers get more money from their sale. And that is the trade-off, and that is an acceptable trade-off to them. They have said, yeah, the consumer experience on Epic Games Store is not going to be on par with other people because we're not taking as much money from each sale, so we can't do it, and that's fine. We believe that the consumers will appreciate that more of their money is going to the developer, that they will live with the fact that not every feature, every convenience feature they're used to on other storefronts is not here. So essentially, that is one of the things that Valve will argue is like, well, we have to take 30% because we offer all of these conveniences to the consumer and to developers. Although you can argue that maybe they're not doing as much for the developers. There's a lot of slop on Steam. It is very hard to get noticed. The discoverability on Steam is crap. It is complete and utter crap unless you have you're lucky, or you know, essentially you have to do a lot of marketing and PR to move the needle. You won't just get discovered on Steam. You know, there's a lot of great games that are hidden on Steam, like hidden gems on Steam that you would never find. And, you know, I looked to somebody who's, you know, good friend of the network, did games based on the network here, YYR. has made some really great games, like Super Duper Multitasking is the biggest one right now, and nobody knows about it. And it's great, and when people try it, they're like, this is great, but nobody knows about it. And it's because it's never, because, you know, YYR has a day job, he's got a family, and he can't spend a lot of money or time doing proper marketing, and he's not able to get his game in streamers' hands, basically, because that's the viral hits. They're not viral in the sense of, oh, it just popped up. No, there was a marketing machine behind it that just worked with streamers. Like Ball Pit had a marketing machine behind it. It wasn't just found. Blueprints wasn't just found. There was something behind it. And Dark Soccer says, and Pixel Poops, but Pixel Poops is free. So, but yeah, most people don't, and especially like free, a lot of people are like, oh, if it's free, it can't be that good. So, but Super Duper Multitasking is actually like $2.99, something like that. It could be argued that Steam could do more for developers, but they take that money and they invest it, and they have a whole retail channel for wallet cards, gift cards. I don't have to give them my payment information. They don't have it. They don't need it, and they don't want it. Well, they want it, but there's no reason that they want it. And so they're using a lot of that money, and Epic Game Store, since they take less, they're doing less because they can't afford to do more. That is an argument that they'll make in court. Now, one of the things that was brought up in our Discord server was, well, everybody takes 30% except for Epic Games. Why are they only going after Steam? And the reason of that is because of all those other companies mentioned that take a 30% cut from their store, Microsoft, Sony, I believe Nintendo also takes 30%. Google does, and I believe in many cases Apple does. So, quote-unquote, everybody else does it, quote-unquote. I'm using my air of quoting fingers because I don't know if they all do it or not. And obviously there's probably deals where like, oh, we take less from you and stuff like that. But of all of those, Valve is the company with the shallowest pockets. And so the idea is, if they win here, if they win against Valve, that's now legal precedent. It will be easier to go up against the companies with deeper pockets, with better lawyers. Valve is essentially the low-hanging fruit. They are the ones they are most likely able to win against. And that's why they're going after Valve first. If they win against Valve and Valve is no longer allowed to charge 30% in the UK, because they're not in the European Union anymore, so it's just the UK, then that opens the door for them to go to Microsoft or to Google and say, hey, legal precedent here, you can't take 30% of every sale. Here's this court case. It's already been tried. And that's part of, and since that will now be part of the law, it will be a precedent, it will be a legal precedent, then it's easier no matter how much money they have. So that's why they're going after Valve first, because Valve is most likely, is the one they have the highest chances of winning, because Valve's pockets aren't as deep. They've got deep pockets, but it's not Google deep. It's not Apple deep. It's not even Nintendo deep. So ZenMonkey11 says, this kind of stuff confuses me. I don't know who is right or wrong, but I hope that it will keep all these digital stores honest in the future. And I want them to look into the Steam Workshop. I'm starting to notice a lot of PC games tie their map editors to Steam Workshop only. The reason I believe that, you know, that would be an issue is because if you have Steam Workshop actually has guidelines and TOS guidelines, and there are things you can't have. There's content you can't have on the Steam Workshop. Either it's, intellectual property concerns, or it's, it's nude mods or things like that, or just things that you don't want to put on the Steam Workshop. But a lot of games are like, no, you have to be on the Steam Workshop, which the developers probably, that's not a Steam thing, really. That's the developers, because, like, you can have both Steam Workshop and non-Steam Workshop mods in your game. You are not locked into the Steam Workshop unless the developer says, I want it to only work with Steam Workshop. That is not a Valve thing, because I have multiple games where I have Steam Workshop mods, but also I have mods that are not from Steam Workshop, that they come from Nexus Mods or something else. So that is actually the developer's call. And if the developer says we only want Steam Workshop, don't be mad at Valve, because Valve's not making him do it. So it'll be interesting to see if this goes forward, or if, you know, because it is just the UK, there is a possibility of a settlement, which means there's no legal precedent. And if Valve just settles out of court and maybe lower says, okay, in the UK, we only take 29% or something. I don't know. Then that is probably what the bigger players want, because then there's no legal precedent, because they settled out of court. Valve can say, there's no wrongdoing. We just settled. We didn't want to go through all this. Then these, you know, the class action, they'll get their money. The people who sued will get their money. Then they will continue making games, and Valve maybe will lower what they take in the UK only. That's probably what's going to happen here. So the other story that I wanted to talk about, Video Games Chronicle reports that Sony has obtained a U.S. patent for a special controller with a touchscreen that lets players choose where the buttons should go. The patent was filed back in February of 2023, was issued just last week, and is described as designs and methods for a game controller. According to the patent's description and accompanying images, the controller would have a large touchscreen covering most of its top surface where the buttons would usually go. The idea is that players would be able to customize where the D-pad, sticks, and action buttons would be positioned on the controller to best suit their personal taste, accessibility needs, or what best suits each specific game. It appears the players can also choose to resize the buttons or even remove some buttons altogether for certain games. In theory, this could mean that if a player was playing a simple platform game, they could replace all the buttons with a single large jump button. Or if they were playing a game that only required a D-pad or a left stick, they could choose to remove one and make the other larger. The patent description reads, quote, "Often conventional controllers adhere to a similar control interface of having a directional pad on one side of the controller and buttons on the other side of the controller," unquote. And then it says, quote, "One of the drawbacks of existing designs may be a fixed configuration. By way of example, the fixed layout may be too small or too large for a user. Similarly, a fixed layout may not be comfortable to a user. Manufacturers typically do not veer from layout or controller size to reduce cost. As a result, controllers may include button configurations for hand sizes that do not accommodate all players." And it says, "There exists a desire for game controllers to allow for different configurations and accommodate hand sizes without having to customize or manufacture controller size." Another drawback of conventional controllers may be the fixed nature of input controls. For example, a controller only has enough space to include a directional pad and joystick, and each element is usually located in a different location. E3 Vale says, "This kind of looks like the Steam controller." All controllers basically have the same kind of layout nowadays, like, because that's also the same general shape of an Xbox controller. It's just it's kind of, these are diagrams as anyway. What they're basically trying to do here is it looks like in the controller, which has the same dimensions as a Steam controller or an Xbox controller, but it would be two big screens, and they'd be touch screens. And you could move around the elements on the left and right touchscreen to be where the buttons are. That way you could have a D-pad up high, or you could have it down low. If you are left-handed, you could have the D-pad on the right, which is what I think a lot of, you know, what some people would actually really love, to have the D-pad on the right instead of on the left. You could move things around. This is very Intellivision-like to me, because Intellivision had, you know, the nine buttons, and then you put an overlay in, and it's like, this is what these buttons do. And you could also theoretically with this have, like, game-specific things, and, you know, even game-specific graphics on the touchscreen and things like that. So I don't think that this is going to be something that is required. I think this is one of those things where it's a great accessibility tool for some people. Some people may have really large hands, or some people may have really small hands. And, you know, a lot of times there was a whole group of people that loved the original Xbox Duke controller because it was huge. and they liked the fact that it was big. And then they switched to the smaller controller, and they're like, well, now this sucks because, like, it's really small. And this kind of helps alleviate that. Now, do I think the PS6 controller is going to just have a touchscreen for buttons and you're not going to have tactile buttons anymore? No, I don't. I see this as an option that you would pay a lot more for. It would be more expensive than an existing controller, but you would be able to, you know, configure it however you want. And I think options are great, especially accessibility options. I am not as scared of this patent as some people are thinking, because a lot of people, whenever they see that a patent's been granted to Sony or Nintendo or whatever, the sky is falling because now they're changing everything about our games and, you know, the new thing's going to have this stuff that I don't want. And no, this is just them patenting something that they're working on. This does mean that nobody else can do it. Apparently somebody tried this. In the 90s, the TurboTouch 360 was a third-party controller released for 8 and 16-bit consoles. It replaced the D-pad with a touchpad to reduce stress on the player's thumbs, but resulted in players accidentally moving their character when naturally resting their thumb on the touch panel. There are ways around that. There's pressure sensors. You can the technology of the 21st century is a little bit further on than it was then. But, you know, if executed well, this could be a really great accessibility tool. And if you're worried about, oh, you know, touchscreen buttons, nobody wants those. You do realize that most gamers in the world now, especially younger ones, play games on their phone and they don't have actual buttons. Like most kids playing Roblox right now on their phone are not using physical buttons. They're used to this. The younger generation is used to touchscreen buttons and not having physical buttons because they're playing on tablets. They're playing on phones. Roblox and Minecraft, you can control completely with the touchscreen, and that's what they're used to. So I don't think it's going to be that jarring for the younger generation to not have tactile buttons, because most of the games they're playing today have no tactile buttons. And as Jerry Matt says, I, of course, wouldn't like this if it was a replacement for future controllers. And I don't think it's a replacement. I think it's going to be an added option, because why would they give this out for free when they can charge more money for this than they would for those with tactile buttons? But, you know, having programmable keys that or buttons that look different and do different things, like I have an Elgato Stream Deck, and it's got icons and stuff, and all the keys change, and there's, you know, graphics underneath. There is a market for that, and there is things that we use for it. And Bakoch says maybe it's an answer to the modular controller. We can swap out sticks and button layouts. And yeah, like there's those things too, like the Xbox adaptive controller. And then I think PlayStation's got one as well that's modular. And this is a cheaper way than having all those physical stuff. But also for the market that they were going for, it needed to like be bigger buttons. Like they didn't need to turn it into you know, touch buttons and push buttons. And hey, you know, you look at the automotive industry and they're getting rid of tactile buttons too, and everything's controlled on a screen. And I would say that everybody loves it, but no, that's not the case. And everybody in our chat is going to be like, I hate it. But good luck buying a new car that has buttons in it and switches and dials. It's not a thing anymore. But what is a thing is a music break, so I can rest my voice for just a little bit. We're going to take a very quick music break, and then we will be back to see what's going to happen on OLR tonight. And yes, people in chat already hate the fact that cars are going mostly touchscreen, and that's why I said a lot of people love it, but most smart people don't. Anyway, we're going to take a quick music break. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here in the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
What's up? It's Jake Kaufman. When I'm not scoring Shovel Knight or doing awesome chip tunes, I'm participating in the Bobby Blackwolf Show.
Good old Vert, Jake Kaufman. He was promoting a Kickstarter at the time, and it got funded, and then never came out, and then he fell off the face of the social media. But I hope he's okay. He did, the reason I played that bumper is during the music break, we played something from DuckTales because of the Disney Afternoon Collection announcement for Switch and Switch 2, and he did the music for DuckTales Remastered, which is not in the collection, it's the original thing. Anyway, So, if you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to have composed music for DuckTales. In fact, not many people have. So, you know, that really limits the pool. All you got to do is send me an MP3 of just your voice. I will choose which DMCA violation to put behind it, or a video of just you and talking about coming back to the Bobby Blackwell show. Normally, I would take calls, or I would try to take calls. But I talked a lot about the Commodore 64 tonight, which wasn't planned, but now y'all know what Agent USA is. But coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network is Orange Lounge Radio 2DX. Season 2 is continuing tonight. It is three people that talk about much more than just video games, but also all things geek culture, and we like to check in with them to see what they're going to be talking about tonight. OLR, are you there?
I guess I am. Hi.
Hi. Let's talk about something that I was talking about earlier tonight. The new touchscreen, the patent for the touchscreen controller. I talked a little bit, you know, and I don't see it as a replacement, but it is something that could be a really good accessibility feature for certain people with different size hands or different mobility and stuff. What's your take on the patent?
I think that it could be a very good idea as long as it's not prohibitively expensive. Mm-hmm. And indeed, I have a lot of friends who have some accessibility issues, including people I've seen who are, I'll say, single-handed.
Right.
Trying to find ways of playing games mm-hmm. that would have otherwise required a mouse. And we've had like one-handed controllers before mm-hmm. when I had wrist surgery and trigger finger surgery, I had used a one-handed controller to play through Blue Dragon. Mm-hmm. So I think having something like this, especially something modular, would be really good for the lefties, good mm-hmm. for anyone who would use that, including people maybe who play with their feet.
Yeah,
I've known of gamers who have played with their feet mm-hmm. because they may have been missing both arms.
Yeah,
it's a good idea. It's a really good idea. I think it's great, but having it not be a pack-in is also a good idea.
Yeah,
because the stuff's already expensive, and this would be even more. Plus, with ongoing tariff costs, mm-hmm. that's why I say as long as it's not prohibitive, this is fine.
Yeah. And I think we're a couple of years from seeing any type of consumer part of this or anything. Like, it's going to take them a while to get to that point. Mm-hmm. But I am not. Everybody's like, but I need tactical buttons. I mean, you might need tactile mm-hmm. buttons, but not everybody does, because a lot of people play games on iPhones mm-hmm. and they don't have, like, you can get, you know, it's obviously got Bluetooth. You can hook up a controller to it, but a lot of people don't. They just have the controls on the screen and they play just fine like that. So I think, you know. I think it will be better than you think, but I hope it is an option and mm-hmm. not a replacement.
Yeah. Well, and I'd also like to add that even just beyond people using their phones, I know, and this is just something I read not long ago about Windows, like Microsoft really pushing more of their ARM architecture mm-hmm. for Surface and whatnot. And even me as a Mac user, I know lots of people who have a touchpad who mm-hmm. use their touchpad to game. Instead of, you know, using, and even me, for those on stream, play Dead by Daylight with a thumb trackball. Mm-hmm. I imagine having a controller like that might mm-hmm. actually make it a lot better, because playing with the tactile analog pads, they're too sensitive.
Yeah.
Having something tactile that I can control more sensitivity with would certainly be a lot better. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I'm very interested to see. This is not a patent I'm upset with. You know, maybe somebody else who was working on this is now upset that now they didn't get the patent. But it's going to be interesting to see what mm-hmm. goes out of it, because I love having more options for more people to enjoy what I get to enjoy.
Exactly. And I also like to point out one little thing. Mm-hmm. Just because you don't like something doesn't mean other people won't. What? There are more people in the world than the people who don't like or do like something.
What?
Don't pee in other people's cornflakes.
What? But the world revolves around me, Jamie.
I said it nicely.
It revolves around me.
Let's ask science. I'm sorry, are you the sun? Because you don't look like enough lava, and I don't hear the Gradius 2 music playing.
I am my mother's son. What else are you going to be so what are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio 2DX tonight?
We have some pinball news. Ooh. That could be some good news for people. Yeah. We have some me information, mm-hmm. not me, myself, and I. Mm-hmm. Thank you, De La Soul. But the me's, M-I-I. And we have some Dragon Ball stuff, because of course we do. Course. Some a video game that's been preserved, a Keitai game, okay. as in the cell phone. So, and we got bones to pick about things.
Uh-oh. Well,
maybe not bad bones.
Well, Orange Lounge Radio 2DX is coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network. Thanks so much, Jamie.
See you then.
So that is it for me. I will be back in 2 weeks on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I will not be here next week because I am going to a Bad Bunny concert viewing party. It is the only time a year I get to see some friends, and I do like, you know, seeing other people in person. So unfortunately, it is a Sunday night. So I'm usually gone on this same Sunday. But yes, so I will be watching the Bad Bunny and even the Green Day concert as well. So it's a viewing party for both the Green Day and the Bad Bunny concerts next week. But Orange Lounge Radio 2DX will also not only be here tonight, but they will also be here next week. So they will actually get to start on time right at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So you will be able to catch them live and have that if you don't care about the Bad Bunny or the Green Day concert or the stuff that's going on around those two concerts. It's up to you. You have options. And I like options. All right. So, yeah, that is it for me. 2 weeks, I'll be back. You can also find us on vognetwork.com/discord throughout the week. You can find me on Instagram at Bobby Black Wolf, on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com, as well as those the Discord server there. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. So thank you, SJRunner Matt, who resubscribed. Thank you so much for resubscribing to the channel. I'm working on the company taxes right now, so it is very much appreciated because we try to stay legal and stay protected here at VOG. All right. I'm going to go ahead and hit the button, and we're going to get out of here. I'll see you in 2 weeks, and enjoy the rest of the week. I hope that if you are still in snow, that soon you'll be able to be buried out soon. I'll be able to leave my house tomorrow. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.